Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading additional articles from the Odessa American, published Wednesday, September 8th, 2021. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 22,423 total cases, 425 deaths. Midland County, 22,662 total cases, 304 deaths. Texas, 3,708,013 total cases, 58,467 deaths. U.S. cases, 40,085,811 total confirmed, and 647,461 deaths. Find out more at COVIDinthebasin.com or the CDC website. MCH releases COVID numbers. Here are the daily COVID inpatient numbers for MCH as of 9 a.m. Tuesday. 89 total COVID patients in-house. Medical, surgical, non-critical, 54 COVID patients. 37 unvaccinated, 11 vaccinated, 6 unknown. Includes 1 on postpartum critical care, 35 COVID patients, 33 on ventilator. 28 unvaccinated, 5 vaccinated, 2 unknown. Of the 33 on ventilators, 5 are vaccinated, 26 are unvaccinated, 2 are unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 21 to 88 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include 1 from Oklahoma, 1 from Colorado Springs, 1 from Hobbs, New Mexico, 1 from Kermit, 3 from Midland, 1 from Saragossa. The rest are from Odessa, Ector County. From staff reports. Monahan's businessman pleads guilty. Alpine. A former Monahan's businessman pleaded guilty on Tuesday to 12 counts of failure to pay withholding taxes, United States Department of Justice press release stated. According to court documents, George Wayne Johnson, 73, of Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, was the owner of Wayne's Welding Services in Monahan's. From 2015 to 2018, WWS withheld tax payments from its employees' paychecks, but failed to pay $1,308,797 in required payroll tax to the Internal Revenue Service. Through his company, Johnson spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on his salary and personal expenses. Johnson faces a maximum penalty on each count of 5 years in prison, the press release stated. A sentencing date has not been set. A federal district court judge will determine any sentence after considering the U.S. sentencing guidelines and other statutory factors. U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff of the Western District of Texas and IRS Special Agent in Charge Richard D. Goss, Houston Division, made the announcement. The IRS is investigating the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Lance Kennedy is prosecuting the case. And now here are more articles that were published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, September 8th. What to Know About COVID Booster Shots by Lauren Neergaard, AP medical writer. COVID-19 booster shots may be coming for at least some Americans, but already the Biden administration is being forced to scale back expectations, illustrating just how much important science still has to be worked out. The initial plan was to offer Pfizer or Moderna boosters starting September 20th, contingent on authorization from U.S. regulators. But now administration officials acknowledge Moderna boosters probably won't be ready by then. The Food and Drug Administration needs more evidence to judge them. Adding to the complexity, Moderna wants its booster to be half the dose of the original shots. As for Pfizer's booster, who really needs another dose right away isn't a simple decision either. What's ultimately recommended for an 80-year-old vaccinated back in December may be different than for a 35-year-old immunized in the spring, who likely would get a stronger immunity boost by waiting longer for another shot. FDA scientific advisors will publicly debate Pfizer's evidence on September 17th, just 3 days before the administration's target. If the FDA approves another dose, then advisors to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will recommend who should get one. That's tricky, because while real-world data shows the vaccines used in the U.S. remain strongly protective against severe disease and death, their ability to prevent milder infection is dropping. It's not clear how much of that is due to immunity waning or the extra contagious Delta variant, or the fact that Delta struck just as much of the country dropped masks and other precautions. When to jump to boosters becomes a judgment, said Dr. Jesse Goodman of Georgetown University, a former FDA vaccine chief. And is that urgent, or do we have time for the data to come in? Already, the CDC is considering recommending the first boosters just for nursing home residents and older adults who'd be at highest risk of severe disease if their immunity wanes, and to frontline health workers who can't come to work if they get even a mild infection. Some other countries already have begun offering boosters amid an ethical debate about whether rich countries should get a third dose before most people in poor countries get their first round. Here's what we know about the biology behind booster decisions. What do booster shots do? Vaccines train the immune system to fight the coronavirus, including by producing antibodies that block the virus from getting inside cells. People harbor huge levels right after the shots, but just like with vaccines against other diseases, antibodies gradually drop until reaching a low maintenance level. A booster dose revs those levels back up again. Pfizer and Moderna have filed FDA applications for booster doses, but the government will decide on extra Johnson & Johnson doses later once that company shares its booster data with the agency. How much protection does that translate into? No one yet knows the magic line. The antibody level, known as the correlate of protection, below which people are at risk for even mild infection, said immunologist Ali Elabedi of Washington University at St. Louis. But vaccine's main purpose is to prevent severe disease. It's a very high bar to really go and say we can completely block infection, Elabedi said. Plus, people's responses to their initial vaccination vary. Younger people, for example, tend to produce more antibodies to begin with than older adults. That means months later, when antibody levels have naturally declined, some people may still have enough to fend off infection, while others don't. That initial variation is behind the FDA's recent decision that people with severely weakened immune systems from organ transplants, cancer, or other conditions need a third dose of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine to have a chance at protection. In those people, it's not just a booster, but an extra amount they need up front. Won't antibodies just wane again after a booster? Eventually. We don't know the duration of protection following the boosters, cautioned Dr. William Moss of Johns Hopkins University. But antibodies are only one defense. If an infection sneaks past, white blood cells called T cells help prevent serious illness by killing virus-infected cells. Another type called memory B cells jump into action to make lots of new antibodies. Those backup systems help explain why protection against severe COVID-19 is holding strong so far for most people. One hint of trouble, CDC has preliminary data that effectiveness against hospitalization in people 75 and older dropped slightly in July to 80% compared to 94% or higher for other adults. It's much easier to protect against severe disease because all you need is immunologic memory. And I would imagine for a younger person that would last for a while, maybe years, said Dr. Paul Offit, a vaccine expert at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. What's the best time to get a booster? For many other types of vaccines, waiting 6 months for a booster is the recommended timing. The Biden administration has been planning on 8 months for COVID-19 boosters. Efforts grow to stamp out use of parasite drug for COVID by Matthew Perrone, AP Health Writer, Washington. Health experts and medical groups are pushing to stamp out the growing use of a decades-old parasite drug to treat COVID-19, warning that it can cause harmful side effects and that there's little evidence it helps. With a fourth wave of infection, more Americans are turning to ivermectin, a cheap drug used to kill worms and other parasites in humans and animals. Federal health officials have seen a surge in prescriptions this summer, accompanied by worrying increases in reported overdoses. The drug was even given to inmates at a jail in Northwest Arkansas for COVID-19, despite federal warnings against that use. On Wednesday, podcaster Joe Rogan, who has been dismissive of the COVID-19 vaccine, announced he has tested positive for the virus and was taking the medication. Ivermectin has been promoted by Republican lawmakers, conservative talk show hosts, and some doctors, amplified via social media to millions of Americans who remain resistant to getting vaccinated. It has also been widely used in other countries, including India and Brazil. This week, the top U.S. professional groups for doctors and pharmacists appealed for an immediate end to the drug's use outside of research. "We are urging physicians, pharmacists, and other prescribers, trusted healthcare professionals in their communities, to warn patients against the use of ivermectin outside of FDA-approved indications and guidance," said the American Medical Association and two pharmacists groups. Large studies are now underway in the U.S. and overseas to determine if the drug has any effect on preventing or blunting COVID-19. The latest plea follows similar warnings from federal and state regulators who are tracking side effects and hospital admissions tied to the drug. Louisiana and Washington issued alerts after an uptick in calls to poison control centers. Some animal feed supply stores have run out of the drug because of people buying the veterinary form to try and treat COVID-19. "There's just not any good evidence right now suggesting this is a good treatment for treating or preventing COVID-19, said Randy McDonough, a pharmacist in Iowa City, Iowa. Ivermectin is approved by the Food and Drug Administration to treat infections of roundworms and other tiny parasites in humans and animals, like cows, horses, and dogs. Tablets are used for internal parasites, while ointments are used to treat head lice and other skin infections. The generic drug works by paralyzing the worms and killing their offspring. The FDA has tried to debunk online claims that animal strength versions of the drug can help fight COVID-19. Taking large doses of this drug is dangerous and can cause serious harm, the FDA warned in a public advisory. And now a column from the Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion page. "Time to End the Secrecy Over 9/11," by George F. Will, Washington Post. By keeping, belatedly and under duress, a campaign promise, President Joe Biden cauterized one wound from his miserable late summer. Commemorations of the 20th anniversary of 9/11 will occur under the cloud of the Afghanistan war's last days, but not marred by the anger of more than 2,000 family members of victims and first responders. They had said on August 6th that Biden would be unwelcome at the ceremonies unless he released classified material pertinent to Saudi Arabia's possible complicity with the 19 airplane hijackers, 15 of whom were Saudis. On Friday, he took a tentative step in the right direction. After 9/11, lawyers for the families filed suits against Saudi charities and individuals, but could not sue Saudi Arabia until Congress in 2016 amended, over President Barack Obama's veto, the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. A federal court granted the lawyers limited discovery, and they subpoenaed FBI material concerning the role of Saudi officials who supported some 9/11 hijackers when they entered the United States. For years, the lawyers say, the FBI was dilatory. When the court ordered more FBI cooperation, the material the lawyers received was covered, at FBI insistence, by a protective order preventing them from telling their clients what they know about Saudi involvement and requiring the lawyers to file almost all court submissions under seal. "We," says one of the lawyers, "have never seen this level of secrecy placed on any lawsuit." After the family's August 6th statement, the White House and Justice Department promised to re-review the contested material for possible declassification. Because similar statements have been made by past administrations, the lawyers suspected Biden's administration was stalling, hoping that after the 20th anniversary, pressure for transparency would subside. But the family's pressure persuaded an administration averse to more bad news. The 9/11 Commission's interestingly worded 2004 report found no evidence that the Saudi government, as an institution, or that senior Saudi officials individually funded the hijackers, but noted the likelihood that charities with significant Saudi government sponsorship diverted funds to Al-Qaeda. Since 2004, FBI investigations have found more. The 9/11 Commission knew about substantial assistance rendered by persons directly or indirectly funded by Saudi Arabia to the first two hijackers to arrive in this country. Today, much more is known. Last week, CBS News reported about a notebook that belonged to a San Diego Saudi student on the Saudi payroll and a close associate of those two hijackers. CBS said the notebook contained a handwritten drawing of a plane and mathematical equation that might be used to view a target and then calculate the rate of descent to the target. The families might succeed in prying information from a government unused to yielding. Despite pressure, the CIA's official history of the 1961 Bay of Pigs debacle remained secret until 55 years after the event. It is possible to imagine that national security was jeopardized by, at long last, releasing the history. It is easy to imagine how a government prone to foreign policy pratfalls could have benefited from studying one. In his 1998 book on secrecy, Senator Daniel Patrick Monahan, Democrat, New York, affirmed that some of it is necessary to protect government's deliberative processes and to conceal the sources, methods, and fruits of intelligence gathering. He also argued, however, that covetous and rivalrous government bureaucracies regard their secrets as property, hiding them from other bureaucracies, with which they sometimes barter secrets. The U.S. Army did not tell President Harry S. Truman that the Venona intercepts of 2,900 Soviet communications proved that Alger Hiss and Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were spies, knowledge that would have calmed two national controversies. Information tending to substantiate American suspicions that Saudi Arabia has more 9/11 blood on its hands than is already known will not subtract measurably from Americans' regards for today's Saudi regime, which the CIA says directed from the highest levels the murder of Post-contributing columnist Jamal Khashoggi. The regime's audacity was perhaps encouraged by the U.S. government's pattern of protecting the regime with secrecy. Biden, given more than 2,000 reasons to do so, seems to have opted for transparency, or, skepticism is always in order, at least promised to revisit a campaign promise. So if he follows through on his promise, we are going to learn, among other things, this. National security is not diminished by information that diminishes Saudi Arabia's good name, which it has already forfeited.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Is there an age limit for preventative exams? Dear Dr. Roach, is there an age limit where it is no longer necessary to have a mammogram or a colonoscopy? I'm 87 and having a debate with my daughter. Answer: screening tests like mammograms and colonoscopies are performed on people with no symptoms in order to prevent problems later in life. There is always a cost of performing these tests. I don't mean just the dollar cost, although these can sometimes be significant, but rather the potential for harm that can come from the test itself, as well as from the follow-up testing and procedures that may be required. For example, a colonoscopy requires a preparation, mildly unpleasant and time-consuming, sedation, which can have side effects, and the procedure itself, which may have unexpected bad outcomes, such as a perforation. None of these things are likely, but they become more likely as people get older. Moreover, if something abnormal is seen, it may require biopsy or even surgery, which have a much higher risk of an adverse outcome. Balancing against these risks is the possibility of benefit. A pre-malignant polyp might be found and removed years before ever becoming a cancer. An early cancer might be identified and more easily cured. But there is always the trade-off between risk of harm now against possibility of benefit later. As people become older, the benefits later become less and one harms now tend to increase. There is no definite or acceptable age cutoff for these procedures, but for most people, the benefits and harms start to become about equal around age 75. Really healthy people with exceptional longevity might continue them until age 80 or more, but no experts recommend these screening tests beyond age 85.
This is the Dear Abby column. Dad's sleep advice embarrasses teenage daughter. Dear Abby, my 16-year-old daughter, Lily, came home from her father's very upset. She has trouble sleeping, and I have been taking her to the doctor for tests. Her father told her not to tell anyone, handed her a vibrator, and told her that an orgasm will help her sleep. Lily was shocked and embarrassed that he would suggest such a thing and asked me if she could throw it away. She no longer wants to go to his house, but wants me to be the one to tell him. I'm furious that he would use such poor judgment with his 16-year-old daughter. He feels he has an open relationship with her and that I am a prude. I feel what he did was extremely inappropriate, and I'm not sure how to handle it. Signed, Overstepped Boundaries. Dear Overstepped Boundaries, speak up. I agree with what Lily's father did was inappropriate. Furthermore, he embarrassed his daughter and he owes her an apology. At 16, if she no longer wants to go to his home, she should not be forced to. The attorney who handled your divorce can make that clear to him. P.S. If Lily wants to throw her father's gift away, reassure her that it's her privilege. Dear Abby, I have been married for 28 years to the perfect man. We married when I was 20 and have 3 grown children. There are stresses in our life, but they are mostly related to extended family. We never argue. We truly have an ideal marriage. I work outside the home and have become friends with a guy there. I enjoy texting and talking with him. He's single and he makes jokes and asks me if I'm still married. I would never cheat on my husband, who does give me a lot of attention. So why do I do this? Signed, Guilty in the Midwest. Dear Guilty, because you are human, and the attention you are receiving is flattering. You didn't mention whether your husband is aware of the flirtation. If he isn't, that may be the reason you feel guilty. I think it's time to clue your husband in. If you do, he may not object. However, if he is threatened, in the interest of keeping your perfect marriage perfect, let this friend know that from now on Your communications will have to be strictly business. Dear Abby, I am a 65-year-old married man dealing with feelings I have never felt before. During the day, I am reliving bad issues that happened in my marriage 25 years ago, and I am dreaming about them at night. I thought I was long past it. It makes me physically ill sometimes, and I think it's getting worse. In past letters, you have written that you need to move on. Tomorrow is another day. Leave the past in the past, and such. I get it. I want to. My question is, where is the switch located that I turn to the off position? Signed, Martin in New Jersey. Dear Martin, you will find the switch you're looking for in the office of a licensed mental health professional. When intrusive thoughts from the past become so overwhelming that they make you physically ill, it's time to get more help than anyone can give you in a letter or a newspaper. Please don't wait. Your physician or your insurance company can refer you. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.